Welcome to Social Media Know-How, the podcast featuring the greatest minds and brands in the world of social and digital marketing. And now, your host, founder and CEO of Link Humans, Jorgen Sundberg.
Hejsan svejsan, hur är läget? Glad påsk and many thanks for tuning into Social Media Know-How, the Link Humans podcast. Serving up social media and know-how in equal measures. Everyone's a winner. I'm your host, Jorgen Sundberg, and this podcast is here to help you improve your social and digital marketing game. And of course, spring is in the air, people. It's the last week of March 2016. And as always, well, I like to think so at least, I've got a great show lined up for you. So we're going to be hearing from J.R. Little all about how to become a listening brand. And he knows a few things about this because he's written a book on it. So get ready to shift your paradigms later in the show. But first, how could I possibly do this episode without mentioning that everyone's favorite micro-blogging social network, maybe? Twitter has turned 10 years this week. So yeah, 10 years, keeping it real, hemorrhaging money. But, you know, who's counting? Maybe the investors, who knows? Anyway, I think Twitter... it's probably my second favorite social network after LinkedIn. And yeah, it's really been, the uptake has been huge. If you look at the last 10 years on celebrities, TV people, comedians, definitely politicians. If you look at someone like Donald Trump, for instance, he basically uses Twitter as his whole PR strategy. And I saw a stat that politicians really love Twitter. 83% of world users, world leaders use it. So that's quite a big stat, whereas very few have, I don't know, LinkedIn profiles or Instagram accounts. And yeah, so the platform's got about just over 300 million followers, users, but they're not growing very quickly. So we'll see how Twitter will fare over the next 10 years. In the UK, we have 15 million users. But yeah, I mean, that's nothing compared to Katy Perry, who's got 84 million followers. So that's UK times a few times, tightly followed by Justin Bieber on 77 million, I should add. And I also noticed that the first hashtag ever was used in August 2007, and it was hashtag Barcamp, so, which I think kind of means meetup. And yeah, I think you may have seen the hashtag Love Twitter, which they're pumping out pretty hard this week, basically for everyone to declare their love to the platform. Right, so that's Twitter. I've got a last call for alcohol, or last call for alcohol. Fancy winning a bottle of champagne? All you have to do is to leave an honest review of this podcast on iTunes or in the podcast app, which is on iOS, and you're in the running. The winner will be revealed next week. So dead simple, just leave an honest review and I'll pick it up from there. And do you want to get in touch with me? I'd love to hear from you. Any feedback or any requests you might have, just ping me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com. That's jorgen@linkhumans.com. And of course, you can also find me on Twitter and other social networks. But right, I now want to move on to my little tip of the week. Okay, so this tip of the week is all about a tool called Sidekick. You may have heard about Sidekick. It's a tool by HubSpot. And it basically addresses an issue people have with emails. So, you know, when you send off emails, you never know if people look at them, and sometimes people reply, sometimes they don't. You don't know if they just glance at it quickly, if they've been looking in detail, if they've been clicking on links and so on. And HubSpot have released something called Sidekick, which has been around for about a year now, I think. And it's basically a plugin to Chrome and to Gmail. So you have to be using Gmail to use this. And basically it tracks your emails. Sounds a little bit creepy perhaps, but it can be really useful. So when you send off emails, then you have a receipt that someone has read it, and you can actually see when they read it, how they read it on a mobile or on a desktop, for instance. And you can sometimes you can even see when people click links. So it's not a perfect tool because it's a little bit buggy sometimes, but it gives you an idea of how much people are actually paying attention to your emails. And I wouldn't use this for every email I send, but I would definitely use it when sending out something important like a proposal or similar. So have a look at this. It's called, well, it's called Sidekick, but the website is getsidekick.com. And I believe there's a free version as well as a paid for one, which is only $10 a month. And it also plugs in nicely to HubSpot's other products. And of course, I'll put a link to this in the show notes. Okay, that's it. Now it's time to transition to this week's interview, all about listening brands.
J.R. Little, how are you?
I am very well. I'm very well. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Wonderful.
Could you tell us about yourself and your work?
Yes. I think the first thing I should probably say about me is that I'm American and I've lived in a lot of different places, which will help explain the accent changes, which I can't control all the time. But I have lived and worked in New York and Dubai, and now I'm based in London. And I have worked in advertising and branding, but now I actually work in media with a focus on innovation and digital. And in my current role, I am sort of the one person in our agency that sort of thinks about the future, worries about it, and then also tries to come up with new products or processes or ways of doing things that can put us in a good position, just to sort of oversimplify what I do. And the agency I work for is called CARAT. And we, C-A-R-A-T though, but the T is silent. We're the number one media agency in terms of our ranking by a reputable industry source called RECMA. But then we're number two by size. So we're pretty much everywhere, every city, middle to large size city. And then just quickly, our clients are GM, MasterCard, British Airways, Adidas, P&G, Mondelez, a whole slew of clients.
Some big ones. And you've written a book called Listening Brands.
Yes. I wrote a book. I sure did. I started writing it about a year and a half ago. More is sort of like a project to prove I could do that to myself. but yeah, I sure did.
So tell us about, based on your book, what's this paradigm shift that you've seen in branding and marketing?
Right. Thank you. Yeah, the book is mainly about that. And the paradigm shift, just straight out of the gate, it is that the people can now deliver a brand's message more effectively than the brand itself. And the reason I sort of feel and try to prove that this paradigm shift has happened is because I have worked sort of in the old world of marketing, communication, and advertising, but now I'm sort of working in the new world, which is very digital and data-centric. And I can just, I could see it. I can see a flip has happened. And I think that flip was created by the rise of social media. So, and, you know, another thing in the book to sort of build on this paradigm shift is I use this analogy of a megaphone. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of this idea that, you know, during many, many, many years ago, the people with the sort of megaphone in society were your governments, were your churches, etc. Then we sort of came into the industrial age, and the people with the megaphone were brands through advertising, and that's sort of like the Mad Men days. But now, and especially since 2010, I would say, when social media really started to become big, we're now seeing that the people themselves, people like you and me, have the power and the ability to speak on behalf of brands.
So it's the power to the consumer and power to the little people. Everyone's a publisher.
Yeah, exactly. But also, you know, if we think about, you know, sort of what we interact with on a daily basis, we're opening our phones many times throughout the day, and we're looking at very social spaces like Facebook or YouTube or Instagram or Twitter or even a comment section on an article. And the things that we're consuming are things that people are sharing and they're commenting on and they're posting. It's not like we're sitting down and watching a TV and having ads fed to us anymore. Things have sort of changed in that way.
And with this change, why do brands need to become, well, listening brands?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, like if you're a marketer, it's kind of to preserve your job and preserve your career. But if you, you know, and if you're concerned about your brand, is to make sure your brand still has a way to connect and build a relationship with the consumers that matter. Because if consumers are connecting in a different way, then you have to know how to do that. And you know, in the book, I talk about why it's important to become a listening brand, and I talk about listening in sort of a broad sense. I don't mean simply listening for words, but in terms of like listening for signals, listening for signs, listening for words indeed, but looking for the clues that help us understand the needs of consumers better. In the book, I also talk about how a lot of our conversations happen in social spaces, but they happen about cultural things. They're not really like happening about category things. And brands are so accustomed to talking about their category. You know, I have a running shoe, my running shoe is the most affordable, or my running shoe runs the fastest. But that's not really how we interact with brands anymore. I mean, we see them in, you know, Instagram posts, or we see them in our friends' Facebook pictures. So there's a little bit of a change there in that we are interacting and meeting brands in cultural sort of scenarios and not necessarily at the shopping mall in a category sort of context.
Right, that's interesting. And what would you say, it was a step-by-step to becoming a listening brand. So let's say that you're a big brand today and you're basically not doing it at all. Where should you start?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is to recognize that there's new tools, there's a new way of doing things. And I like to say, be prepared to totally flip the process that you're used to. And what I mean by that is, in the sort of Mad Men days, and there was this sort of this process and this flow of talking to consumers, I'll say talking at consumers, where some people sit around and they use their intuition, they use their gut, and they use maybe qualitative research to come up with this somewhat esoteric brand idea. And then that is turned into messaging or propositions or still sort of intangible things. And then that's reinterpreted into a campaign, and then the campaign is pushed across media, and then media is bought. And last but not least, you think about how's this going to work in a digital space. But I think today, because of what we can learn from all of the digital interactions we already have going, if we're a brand, those things create data. And if we look at that first, it might tell us things about our consumer we never would have been able to imagine with our intuition. It might tell us they're a different makeup than who we thought they would be or who we were targeting. It might tell us they have interests that we never imagined that they had. It could even tell us, you know, geolocation, where they spend their time, what kind of phone they use during the day. And those things are actually clues and signs that help us to understand then what our brand needs to be to appeal to them. Or you could actually say what our brand needs to not be to appeal to them.
And I would imagine lots of companies and brands will say, yeah, we are a listening brand and we do all these things. Yeah. But where do you see brands getting it wrong?
Yeah. There's a lot of places. I think, you know, if I was just to mention a few things, I think starting with the idea today of what can I say versus how can I help. I think we still have a lot of marketers that trust their intuition and their gut and what they've done in the past as opposed to what actually will resonate today. And ignoring audiences that are already showing interest to them, but they may not even know it. And this could be people that are, you know, asking questions in social spaces like, how do I put this child's car seat in the back of this brand new Chevrolet car? That is a sign that there's an audience there wanting to hear from you if you're a brand. And so there has to be a willingness to listen and to respond to them.
And in terms of infrastructure, how do you build an effective listening infrastructure? I guess there's lots of technology involved and people and so on.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is where it gets very complex here. It really does. But I will break it down as best as I can. And I'll even drop some names that could easily be, you know, Googled and looked up. But, I mean, I think the first thing is talent. There is a talent challenge in that none of us have been taught to do this stuff in our business schools. We're all learning as we go, and that's one thing. So, but the talent has to be very curious. And there's already some tools with the big partners. So Twitter, Facebook, Google, even increasingly Amazon, they all have to some degree easily accessible tools that let you know what people are saying, what people are interested in, and if they're a match with who your consumer is. They're also increasingly letting brands that spend a lot of money with them to match sort of CRM data to their data. So if your company has the email address of a consumer, then you can actually use that email address to sort of find them in some ways on some of these platforms, of course, protecting identity. Those are like the big places to start. But then if we were to get into the real niche players, there are the proper listening players, which is picking up on word clues. And that would be like a Crimson Hexagon or a Pulsar. There are the players that help you respond to all these people who may be mentioning your brand or mentioning a topic you're interested in. And that would be players like Lithium, Hootsuite, or Sprout. And then there are players who are actually working more in the digital as sort of data points, not necessarily as words. And this is players like DataSift or even matching different pools of data with a player like an Axiom. But, you know, this is a bit of a rabbit hole. It can go deeper and deeper and deeper. But that's sort of the different layers.
Yes. Okay, great. Lots to Google there.
And, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of competition in that space, which is great. You mentioned something about ensuring to understand different types of social data. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple things that's important to understand. Most good agencies or good marketers already have access to listening to social data that has been actively marked, tagged, handled by a consumer. But there's increasingly the ability to listen to especially social commentary that hasn't been actively tagged or marked by that consumer. So just picking up on words, and a couple of those players I mentioned like Crimson Hexagon and Pulsar can do that. But then there's also a difference in, say, commentary which is someone actually said something about the topic or said something about your brand and what they typed in a social space. And there's also sentiment, and that's more about mood or feeling, or do they feel positively about your brand or the topic or negatively. And so this sort of idea of social data, even in itself, is now getting a lot more nuanced than it was, say, a year or 2 years ago.
Right. And if we look at these social and digital channels, which ones work best to listen in from your clients' perspectives, and where do you get the most valuable data?
Yeah, I mean, without it, for our clients at our agency, we have significant spend with Google and Facebook, and they just have the reach. You know, in terms of the social landscape, you've got, you know, Facebook with Instagram, and they've got Messenger, and soon, probably in a year or two, they'll start to do more with WhatsApp. And then in terms of like people's motivations to find things, look for things, navigate the web, or even navigate their physical world, you've got Google, you know. So between those two players, you're getting a lot of amazing insights if you have the right relationship with them. And those would be the ones to start with for sort of the insight learning. But for the actual listening in real time, it would be the Crimson Hexagon or the Pulsar.
Yeah, okay. Right, and have you I'm sure you calculated this somewhere. What's the ROI of becoming a listening brand, and how do you actually measure it?
Yeah, well, the ROI question. I do not have a specific number, but I do have some things we look at. So on a basic level, you know, if you're listening and understanding insights, or even listening to what people are saying, you won't waste budget on making things you don't need. And if you don't waste budget on making things you don't need, you obviously won't waste media spend as well. I think on another sort of level, you know, you will go fishing where the fish are. You won't miss audiences that are already expressing some level of an interest in you by mentioning your topic or mentioning your brand. And then, you know, last, and this one's harder to prove in the short term, but it's that sort of long-term value. You know, are you getting better return over the long term because your brand metrics have improved, like brand for me or a brand that I trust. And there's some players out there that are actually, you know, looking at that as well, with Nielsen and Edelman, the long term impact of resonating sort of with the culture and being a responsive brand. So there's a few different levels. The ideal would be to have some better attribution so that we could get this this value packaged up in more of a short term. But right now it's more about the long term sort of resetting the brand and making the brand appealing to consumers.
Yeah, great. And are you talking about is that the Edelman Trust Barometer?
Yeah, exactly. And the Edelman Trust Barometer is fairly reputable source in the industry.
And so you work with lots of brands, and I'm sure you look at brands all the time. What are some listening brands that are doing it right, and why?
Yeah, so I think you know, these brands that are sort of owning an area where they now have a right to talk about something other than themselves are getting it right. And I'll give you some examples. So Volkswagen with film, or Guinness with rugby, or Red Bull with adventure sports, or Stella Artois with film, or even Pampers diapers in America with ebooks and reading. These are brands that have listened. They've got to know their consumers. They understand that while the association might not be very direct, there is a correlation between their audience and this sort of other territory that their audience cares about. And that's why I, as I mentioned earlier, that's why culture is so important. So you sort of earn the right to be a part of the conversation around something that maybe isn't even obviously connected with what you make or do or provide. And then, so I think those are some of the ones that are getting it right. I think if we look at brands like, I think it was even this week with Valentine's Day, Adidas. And Adidas in the U.S., you know, put out an Instagram picture of what looked like two women's feet or shoes with two people in an, two women in an embrace on Valentine's Day. So they were obviously sort of making a point or saying something about same-sex relationships. And the way they sort of handled the positive sentiment and the negative sentiment, I think made them look, you know, wonderful. I think it made them look human. It made them look likable. And they have a point of view and they have something to say beyond, you know, we make shoes. Those are a couple. The last little sort of set of examples would be these brands who are kind of disrupting other brands' business. And I'm talking about your Ubers or your Airbnbs or your Netflix. They're more providing a helpful, useful service than they are providing or making overtly marketing messages. And an example of one of those that has done well, but where a more traditional brand has also responded well, would be Dollar Shave Club. And Dollar Shave Club is this company where you can order your shaving razor blades directly through the mail and save money. But Gillette has responded with creating their own shave club. So they've sort of paid attention, saw the change, saw the trend, listened to what consumers want, and responded with the right response.
Yeah, I saw that recently, yeah. And I think, and also the Dollar Shave Club, apparently you can buy those razor blades straight from the Dollar Shave Club supplier, which is less than a tenth of the price.
Exactly. And but it's that kind of disruption that is really just based on being very useful and trying to just do good by the consumer, as opposed to trying to market to the consumer and then somehow justify, you know, greater margins through your amazing marketing campaign.
Yeah, and I think it's also when you people know what you sell already, so you can't just be shoving it down people's throats. You kind of have to do something else. Like Coca-Cola, they can't just talk about their soda all the time. It's more about being, you know, let's be happy and so on. Great. And so I wanted to talk to you because you're the expert here. We talked about brands and some of your clients on. But what's your own social media favorite channels? Where do you get your kicks on social?
Yeah, you know, I and it's one that surprises a lot of people. I actually really like LinkedIn. Uh-huh. I really do, because I like long form content. I like hearing sort of like self-publishing. I think that platform's doing a pretty good job with letting, you know, thought leaders self-publish. I enjoy LinkedIn a lot. I look at Twitter just to get my headlines. I follow Instagram to see how, you know, brands are sort of creating the fantasy around themselves. And then those are the main Western players. But then I also try to make sure I know what some of the Eastern players are at least doing, because sometimes the Western players learn from the Eastern players, and those Eastern players might be Tencent with WeChat, it might be Line in Japan, or it might be Kakao in Korea. And every once in a while, I'll just look to make sure I know what sort of innovations they're doing, because we can usually expect that the sort of Silicon Valley players will do it after them.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm glad you mentioned LinkedIn, because I saw an article of yours on your LinkedIn profile, and the title is, "Does Branding Still Make a Difference?"
Yeah.
What's the answer?
Yes and no. I mean, I think, you know, we all want clickbait, so we have to be a bit provocative with our headlines. But yes and no. And I like to, and I'll tell you why I like that. I like to say no, because I think people have a very distorted view of how our brand is built today. So we can't use the same brand building tools to make a brand. But if we think of a brand as this sort of intangible, valuable association to a name, a product, or a service, then yes. But the way we go about building that intangible value is very different today than, say, it was a year, two, five, 10 years ago.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes, so
people
can have the long form read and make a comment, perhaps.
Oh, thank you.
Right. Finally, final question. Where can we learn more about yourself, JR, and your work? And make sure you plug your book now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do like to publish on LinkedIn, so it's JR Little on LinkedIn. I am also on Twitter with J_R_Little. And then I wrote the book, and this book is on Amazon US and it's on Amazon UK. And it's called Listening Brands, How Data is Rewriting the Rules of Branding. And it's under my name, which is JR Little. With no periods. So thank you for letting me plug the book.
Okay. JR Little, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
What do you think? Does branding still make a difference? I would like to think so. I'm sure Coca-Cola would like to think so. But hey, check out JR's book and learn more. Right, so here's what you want to do next after listening to this podcast episode. You want to, if you haven't done it already, you want to subscribe on iTunes. You want to leave a review. Keep it honest. Then you want to win a bottle of champagne. And then you want to party like it's 1999. That's all I ask of you. Just leave an honest review. And you might be the winner of this bottle of champagne. I will announce the winner next week, so, and I'll also give you a nice shout out on the podcast. So please do that. Right, that's it for me. Hope you have a nice long weekend over Easter. Many thanks for tuning in as always, and I will catch you next week. Ayokim.
Thank you for listening to Social Media Know-How with your host, Jorgen Sundberg of Link Humans. For show notes and more, go to linkhumans.com/podcast and check out the hashtag SMKnowHow.
My motto in life would probably be drink water, take a lot of naps.